pretty good Airbnb commercial. I haven't seen those. Hmm. And then I was like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel.
I'm paying for this,
but I'm also seeing ads, right? It's that thing in the middle. Hello, and welcome to Catalyst, launched by Entity Data Podcast. I'm Gina Trapani, and as always, I'm joined by my business partner, Chris Lasacco. Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Gina.
It's so nice to be here.
It's always great to be in the studio. We've got that on-air sign lit up.
We've got
an exciting topic to talk about. It's all good things.
Let's just talk about software. I want to talk about product. I want to talk about digital products. We got a software conversation that we've got to have. I've been waiting for this.
This is a good one.
So there is a product called Mint, which is now owned by a big company called Intuit. It's a personal finance product. And for longtime listeners know that Chris and I are huge personal finance nerds.
It's true.
And I've been using Mint since 2009. In like 2009, I wrote a post on Lifehacker, the site I used to edit, about like, you know, why I stopped being paranoid and started using Mint. The premise of the app is, you know, you are a person in the world. Maybe you have a family and you've got like a bunch of accounts, like bank accounts, checking account, savings account. You got a 401k and you've got a credit card. And I wouldn't say I'm a credit card churner, but I've got a bunch of different cards, right? I got like the travel card.
Most people do.
You know, if you're married or you're in a family that you share, there's a ton of accounts. And so you log into one of your banks, you know, there's a pie chart. Here's where your money's going. There's some spending, right? But it's not useful because when you've got a bunch of different accounts, it's just like a tiny slice.
Right. You're only seeing part of the full picture. You're only seeing that bank or that financial institution, you know, their particular data set about your spending or your income or whatever.
That's right. My Amazon card thinks all I do is spend money at Amazon because I don't, that's the only place that I use it.
Right.
So Mint is this product that essentially aggregates all your accounts and all your transactions into one place with the idea that, you know, I like to create an illusion of control in my life. That if I know where my money is going, might be a therapy session and not a podcast. But I've been a big fan and user of Mint since 2009. And what's so interesting about this kind of personal finance app is that the more that you use it, the more history, the more data you have, right, about your spending, about your life, about your, you know, net worth, about your debt, you know, hopefully going down and not going up, right? You start to get this like very full and like long-term picture of your progress in life. I'm not equating money with progress in life, but it is one way that we manage our lives and figure out and, you know, have families and buy homes and all that kind of stuff. So like the more that you use it, the more that you sort of train it and say, this is my paycheck and this is how I have to, and this is, this category is, you know, food delivery. Like it just kind of works it in the background, pulls your transactions.
So this was the premise of Mint, right? The premise of Mint was kind of like set it and forget it. You know, you link all your accounts and then you have to do very little manual work on top of it for it to start to derive insights about your income and spending that could then provide you some value about changing your behavior, right? And a lot of people bought into it and they said, let me connect all this up. But what you're driving at is that this isn't a personal finance review episode of Catalyst.
It is not.
What was interesting about Mint is that it was completely free. You could come in and connect all your accounts, upload all your stuff, and then use the product for free in perpetuity, right? And it was a very interesting model because the way that they made money was through offers. They had partners who would offer you, you know, a credit card or an account or a line of credit or a personal loan or whatever that was, you know, targeted at your particular situation.
Right. Because it knew a lot about you, right? Like specific offers. Like I see that you're paying a high interest rate on this credit card. Here's a lower interest rate credit card, right? And these were partners. These were sponsored. This is ads. This is an ad supported app. To the point where, you know, you look at your transaction list and there'd be like a couple of transactions and then there'd be an ad and you could, you know, to Mint's credit.
Oh, like
you
could, the transaction list.
Yes. It wasn't overwhelming. It wasn't like takeovers and newsletter pop-ups and it was in the experience, but it was definitely there. I think it's funny. Like we talk about free with ad supported apps or websites, you know, you're paying with your attention.
That's right. That's and you're exactly paying with right.
like the microseconds that you take to be like, no, I don't, you know. And look, I got to tell you, after years of using it and seeing like ads work, like there were a couple of things that I did actually sign up for. I'd seen them on Mint and I'd heard of them. So then when it came time, I was like, oh, I thought of, you know, not that I was like necessarily clicking ads. The model works, but the model didn't work well enough. Mint was not, this is kind of my editorial and what I leaned. Like, I think that it was, you know, not making enough money to sustain itself. Intuit, makers of TurboTax, had purchased Mint. They made the decision to sunset Mint and to roll it into Credit Karma, which is another Intuit one of their product, which is like a product really focused on your credit score and like managing your credit score. And so they announced this in the fall, last fall.
Several months ago.
Yeah. They gave folks like a big heads up, but it was like, hey, you're going to go to Credit Karma. And to their credit, they're like, there's just not the same features. There are many features that are not going to be in Credit Karma.
Right. But it's a different product.
It's a totally different product. And your transactions, we're only going to have like the last few months. Like they're not going to keep, you know, I had whatever, 13 years or something. Now there's, you know, ways to export. And I did that. And so I was in this spot where I was like, oh, okay, this thing which I've sort of come to rely on and, you know, like I checked in on my spending and made decisions about my life, you know, in this app. I was like, all right, I gotta make a change. And there's a whole world of personal finance apps that do this, right? There's like the Quickens and, you know, the Simplifies. There's like spreadsheets. I love spreadsheets.
Spreadsheets are great.
And I had to make a call. What am I going to do? And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to, you know, train this thing and get it all set up and configured and, you know, into my process. And so I looked at a bunch of the alternatives and I tried an app called Monarch, which is actually founded by one of the original Mint PMs, product managers. And Monarch jumped on the Mint announcement. They jumped on it. They immediately deployed like a 50% off. It's a paid web app. And I was like, all right. And there was like a free trial. Like it was well done. And so I did the trial and I was like, oh, this is like a modern front end. Like this is a nice, like modern web app. Because Mint had, in my view, the front end, the experience, it hadn't changed a whole lot. And it felt old. It kind of atrophied a little bit.
It was kind of dated.
It was kind of dated and frozen in time. It was right. clear they weren't investing in it.
Yes. It's like when you go into a kitchen in a house and the kitchen was like, it's not like super old.
It's not bad.
But it's from like the mid 90s. And you're like, oh, I could see how you could update this. Like this just feels a little stuck in the past. You know?
I mean, counters were clean. The appliances were functional. Like it wasn't terribly ugly, but it just was like, oh, I just feel like I went back in time a little bit. That's kind of what Mint felt like. So my immediate impression of Monarch was like, oh, like this is, you know, there was like use of just like modern touches that are, gosh, I can't even say are really modern even at this point, but just like using emojis and understanding dark mode and to even feel the refreshes, right? Like we don't expect to feel whole page refreshes, for example, you know, like in web apps, in modern web apps anymore. So I started using Monarch. It was really interesting to me though, because Monarch was not ready for the
influx of users. Yeah.
Yes. And so I started following the Monarch subreddit and I started reading their blog to, you know, they were really pretty communicative about the fact that they, you know, they were just jumping up. This is like an opportunity of an app's lifetime, right? Like
you've
got this mass exodus of people who
need
are
a new
potential
thing.
Customers. Yeah, exactly. And we're in this moment in 2024. And I'm curious to know if you agree. I think we're in this moment where people are paying for software. Paying for software is a lot less of a controversial thing, like as a user.
I completely agree.
How did that happen?
What's that saying? Change happens slowly and then all at once?
Yes. You know?
I think we've been moving in this direction for a while.
Yeah.
I think the general population has gotten more comfortable with the idea of subscriptions, period. You know? Yeah. Like, it's very interesting if you think about the parallels to like TV, where it used to be you get your cable subscription and somebody comes to your house and they physically run a wire from your street to your house and they plug it into a box and they say, good news, you now have access to all of these things and you have to pay me $149 a month, but you get it all.
Yes.
And it was like, okay, cool. And we were all kind of on board with that for a while. And then, you know, the great unbundling
like
happened.
HBO? Right, exactly.
Well, right. And then it was like, well, I don't want to pay for hundreds of channels that I never watch. I want to pay for the few
good ones.
Things, right, that I do watch. And so it kind of became normal that like, oh, I want, you know, Netflix and Hulu and those are the things. And I don't need the entire set of things that I never go to. Although it's interesting, we could maybe do another episode on how like bundling is kind of coming back, because now it's like Hulu and Disney Plus and ESPN.
Right.
But I think my point was, it was normal that like, oh, I need to subscribe for this now. Or like, yeah, I bought my iPhone and I need to make sure that I have enough space to back things up and enough room for my photos. I'm going to sign up for, you know, one of the iCloud tiers and just have all my stuff there. And it's a monthly fee of $9.99 or $4.99 or whatever it is. And I'm just like used to it, you know, paying for stuff slowly. And then all at once became more natural and more easy. And people were like, okay, I'm kind of like used to this. And so software products were the same, right? It became, I'm not going and taking a box off the shelf and saying, great, now I have Photoshop that I can use forever. It was like, I get a subscription to Creative Cloud from Adobe, and I can use Photoshop and Illustrator and whatever else that I need to use. It's getting consistently updated, and I'm getting the latest features, right, on demand. And I'm paying a subscription for the
updates,
ability to
for
do
storage,
it.
For the,
And then if I end up not using the software, I can cancel the subscription, and now I don't have access anymore, but I don't have to bear the cost. It just became more normal. It became a more normal thing for people to sign up and give their credit card versus just expecting that they could access something for free or having to pay, you know, a much bigger one-time payment to get something in a sense for like a lifetime license.
You mean like going to the big box store and like buying that like copy of, you know, a flight simulator off the shelf at Best Buy? Yeah, with the CD or whatever. Or set
with the CD depending on your frame of reference, floppy disks, which
floppy
disks, remember.
Right, yeah. Exactly. In the early 2010s, I was like deep in the open source like world and sort of thinking, you know, like software wants to be free, information wants to be free, Web 2.0 when APIs just became open. And it was this idea that like you could access data and connect, you know, apps like even like Twitter, like the Twitter API and see, you know, mash up, you know, data from this app and then make a kind of a free website. This was like a big thing. When I was editor in chief of Lifehacker, I had a rule, like it was like, we do not cover software that you have to pay for. We are only doing free software. Yes.
Wow.
At that time, you know, it was just this explosion of new free, I'm saying free, advertising supported things. And I mean, you know, again, you're paying with your attention versus your money, right? And there's like a different psychology about those two things. We were really into, it was like, oh, look at all these cool possibilities and what can you hack together? I mean, there was also this just like sort of ethos of like, you know, if I take IFTTT or, you know, Yahoo Pipes or, you know, the Zapier would be the modern equivalent. Yeah. And I connect these two things. Like
plug a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah, it was like Lego parts, you know, and you can, oh, you can do this like cool thing for free. But, you know, over time, I was like, this is a mistake, because paying for something that's valuable to you, that provides a valuable service. And I think also today people understand the way that the internet works a little bit more, like the way, like this idea that there are servers somewhere, like computers somewhere that are saving your data, you know, and like that costs money. And also just convenience, right? Like I don't want to manually back up my photos on a hard drive in my apartment.
Yes.
I'd rather just pay the $2 a month or whatever it is to Apple to just automatically, and I'm assuming that Apple has my photos, right? And that's valuable to me because photos are really valuable. It's like my life, you know?
Yeah. Part of this is the software as a service revolution, right? But what we're describing is something a little bit different or in addition to, right? Which is the idea that I'm kind of outsourcing labor almost.
Yes.
Right? By paying a little bit for it. And
yes.
And the equation for a lot of people makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. I also wonder if some of this is the app revolution, right? The idea that so many people are on their phones, and from the introduction of the app store, the idea was there are going to be free apps and there are going to be paid apps. And so it just became normal that my phone already has my credit card. If I want to get access to an app, I got
to
buy
double-click
it. Right, double-click to pay.
And right, and the idea of in-app purchases, like you can try this for free, and then at some point, if you want these extra things, which is a kind of
that's right,
other
freemium.
Class. Yeah, you know, the reason why I went to money, I used to use Microsoft Money, and I would download, you know, the files and import them, right? And the reason why I went to Mint originally was like, I just want this to happen. I don't want to spend my time doing data and like entering my transactions. And so it was interesting when moving over to Monarch, like I really became more aware of how sort of complex a personal finance app like Mint or Monarch actually is. Like there's two parts of it, right? There's the back end part, which is constantly kind of pulling all of my accounts and getting transactions. And there's complexities around transactions that are pending and when they're finalized and is the money available? What is the statement balance versus the current balance? Like there's a lot of complexity. And so there's this back end engine that pulls transactions and gets those numbers right. And I got to tell you, I didn't appreciate this about Mint until I switched. Yeah. Mint had this down. And this makes sense, right? Like, you know, especially at Intuit, right? I'm sure Intuit has this down. Mint had this down. I didn't have any trouble grabbing transactions. Monarch uses, because there aren't standard formats for this kind of data, Monarch uses like a variety of middle, you know, like Plaid and FinCity and MX, and it exposes that to you. Like if it has trouble connecting to your account, they'll be like, well, why don't you try MX instead? And there's part of me that's like, I don't want to know.
Abstract that away from me.
I don't want to know. Abstract that away from me. Yeah, exactly. So you can see that that's kind of immature on the Monarch side, but the front end experience on Monarch is very, very good. The budgeting, the features, you know, the budgeting, the managing your spending, seeing, and it feels really good. And this point that you made about outsourcing labor, like that's what I'm paying for, right? Because I had a moment where I was like, I'm just going to have an Excel sheet like a Google Sheet. There's even like plugins for those things. There's a thing called Tiller where you can connect like through Plaid and MX and FinCity and like we'll bring in your transaction for you, but you still have to configure your spreadsheet, which again, I love because I'm a nerd, but like,
right. There's a point.
I will spend endless amounts of time.
Where the trade-off doesn't make sense anymore. I love this idea of comparing like things you can kind of build yourself or construct yourself. You start with the building blocks and then you make it all versus like something that is really tailored to exactly what you need. And there are good arguments in both cases, you know, and sometimes it is worth it to make your own thing and to say, no, I want to like do this by hand. And I want to understand down to the most basic parts of it, how it's working, the way that it's working, why it's doing what it's doing. I want to be able to tweak it and adjust it. But there is 100% a maintenance burden, if you want to think of it that way, that you are inheriting when you do something yourself. And this applies to so many things, right? It's not just personal finance, it's anything you want to make on your own versus saying, no, I'm going to use something that is purpose-built for what I want to do, and it's going to give me a lot of things out of the box that then I don't have to worry about. I think this is why Squarespace is successful, or Wix, or any of these like out-of-the-box website platforms, right? And the purist in me wants to be like, no, I want to write the HTML and the CSS, and I want to, you know, get it right. I want to control it end-to-end, right? Because this is what we do. We make custom software. So we think about rolling websites as building custom software. But for 99% of the population, something like Squarespace is great, where it's like, oh, you want to make a website and you don't want to have to think about responsive design and good navigation patterns and making sure images look really good and all the like basic stuff. It's purpose-built for that. Like, we'll handle it all out of the box. And, you know, you're going to get all the value. You could jump right to the make your business part of it as opposed to figure out the website part of it.
Absolutely. And so it's been fascinating watching these. There's this expectation, especially when you pay for something, you're going to do that. You're not going to have to think, right? That it's just going to work because you're paying money, right? So I've been following these forums of Mint users who are just like, come and just say, like, Monarch doesn't work. I have this Canadian bank and I think transactions are going like, and this just like really angry sense of entitlement because it's a paid product and you paid half because they had this promotion for Mint people, but there's just a psychology to that. Like I think with Mint, and I talked to lots of people whose accounts didn't work with Mint. They're just like, I can't use this. And they would just leave, right? They just stop using it, right? Because they're not, you know. But there's something about giving your money and be like, this is supposed to work. And as product leaders too, like this is so the Monarch folks jumped in and said, look, we had two customer service representatives when Mint made their announcement, and now we have 24. The expectation is when something isn't working that you paid for, you're going to get support or you're going to get your money back.
Right.
Someone's going to help you fix it one way or another. You're going to lose me as a customer. Folks are going to, you know. And so it was so fascinating to me. I was thinking about how like the shape of a team is different when you've got a paid product versus an ad-supported product, right? Because you're selling to individual consumers and they're $50 or whatever it is a year versus advertisers, which are much larger payments, but less frequent, right? And it just, all the incentives are different.
They're totally different.
Completely different. Even though user acquisition in both cases is paramount, right? Like this thing, you know, you don't survive unless you have the right amount of
energy.
With ad supported, you need lots of eyeballs. And with subscription supported, if your pricing's right, you know, there's some sweet spot of number of users you need to sustain your business and the cost of your business.
This is what I was going to say is, yes, user acquisition is paramount, but it's different in both models, right? And you are optimizing for different kinds of growth. And it is, if you think about it from the product leader perspective, you have to approach those two things very differently. You have to growth at all costs because you're trying to get more eyeballs and you're trying to be able to charge more from your sponsors.
Yeah.
That's going to lead you to make some different decisions, right? And it takes a very critical eye to say, we need to maintain the integrity of the product that we're building while trying to go after that huge growth. And on the subscriber side, you have to think about, how do I make sure that my growth is measured and appropriate so that I can have the supporting structures in place as people are giving us their money, so that it feels correct and sustainable as we go forward. It's a very different product challenge. And I think people who are very good at one of those things have to have a healthy appreciation for the other as they think about trying something different.
And for paid services, there's this whole aspect of paid subscriber, you know, services that is just billing management, right?
Completely.
Like there's the user-facing part of like, where I submit payments. Then there's just like the support part, like credit cards expire. And, you know, how do you refund folks who cancel? Like, can you cancel? You know, this is a dark pattern too, right? Like, oh, you need to call us in order to cancel. I don't believe that that's true for Monarch. But I've been in this situation where, you know, I think with the New York Times.
I was going to say that too.
Yeah. I was like, all right, I'm ready to. And it's like, please call us. And then you have to go through the whole deal with a human being.
Chat with somebody.
Like chat with somebody. Right, exactly. And I actually think the Times changes. I think you can do this via the chat bot now. And in this sort of moment in AI and automation, you often, you know, are going to pull up a chatbot who is not a human being, you know, who's going to offer you, I mean, how many times you've been in the chatbot situation where they're like, it looks like you're looking for information about how to manage your billing. Like, how does this article in our knowledge base like work for you? And it's like, yes or no. And you're just like, I just need someone to help me. Like you're charging my credit card and like I deserve, you know.
Right. This is not okay.
Customer service. Yeah, exactly.
And there's a growing revolt, I think, that is happening where people don't, and I'm not talking about generative AI, like ChatGPT like experiences. I'm talking about like the decision tree chatbot where you just click buttons and it's routing you to a particular area. They're awful. And I think people's tolerance for them has gone way, way down. It's how phone trees are. Like people reacted have a negative association with phone trees because it just takes 12 times as long to navigate to where I need to go versus saying to a human being, here's what I need to do. So that's a tangent, but I think it'll be very interesting to see what our industry does, you know, to use these newer approaches to like regular human language to change those experiences.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you that the minutiae of handling payments and service and all, like, it's critically important. And as you think about expanding to offer that kind of, you know, customer focused thing, you have to change. You have to change how your team operates to do it effectively. And it might have impact on your platform too, your software stack.
Right. And there's a whole aspect of the product that you have to build out, like just subscription management alone, you're doing it through the App Store.
And there are some good third-party services, right? I mean, Stripe is always referenced.
Yeah.
There's a great one called Revenue Cat that allows you to offer subscription-based services like in apps. So there's a whole secondary world here,
Recurly,
exactly, that will allow you to offload some of this to, I mean, they're purpose-built for this exact thing, right? Mm-hmm. Handling payments and subscriptions and having good management structures around it.
The one thing I do want to say as a user who tracks my spending, as we've established, it is, there is a level of like subscription fatigue also. I agree with you. We should bring this up. Like, there was something that happened recently that my brother was like, I can't believe I'm signing up for another streaming service. Like, there's definitely like this feeling of like, oh, like I'm like,
it's another thing I got to download.
How many things am I going to pay for? Right. And all, a friend of mine was like, yeah, you know, I work with a financial advisor and you know, she had me go through all my transactions. And I realized that I had like three Kindle subscriptions. I'm not really sure how that happened. But now I got them down to one.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, you know, because you tap the button, you know, you're like, I have this already. I want to just give voice to the fact that there is some subscription fatigue right now, I think, and the pendulum swings. Like, I think we started in like free, we moved toward more subscriptions and pay for, then, you know, there's like in-app purchases. Now we're moving again. You know, it was a great unbundling and now we're bundling a little bit again. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely on the train right now. Like, I just pay for like the super fancy, you know, mobile phone plan, which also bundles in like Apple TV and Hulu and Netflix, you know, like I like just, okay, fine. And like, you know, airplane Wi-Fi, like, because it bothers me to see the like $3 charge on my credit card once a month, which is another, you know, psychology thing, I guess.
Well, what's interesting is like the mobile carriers, that's kind of like the new version of the what the cable companies used to do.
Yes,
right?
It is. Yes.
So rather than paying Optimum for this giant cable bundle, instead you're paying T-Mobile or Verizon or AT&T, but you're getting wireless service plus Disney
Some
Plus,
streaming services.
Right, exactly. Plus iCloud, whatever. It's interesting.
It is interesting. And they like work this. There's this like T-Mobile Tuesdays thing. They like make it like, oh, these big giveaways. You're getting all this stuff. Even though like I'm paying. Our phone plan is not like I'm paying for
it.
Right.
You're paying a lot of money.
Right. But it's a psychological thing. Like I'm getting all this stuff.
That's why it works so well, because you feel like you're getting a bunch of perks.
T-Mobile actually just like, I still get Netflix, but they downgraded it to the ad supported plan. So, and this happened recently, you know, my wife and I were watching Netflix and like an ad started and we were like, whoa.
There's a lot of things in the middle now where it's free and ad supported, and then you've got to go up a tier or two, right? Netflix was a big one, but there are a lot. I mean, it happens in software platforms too. And some people are like, absolutely, this is totally worth it. I'm going to pay. And then other people are like, no, like I'm not paying for this free thing. Like,
right.
Which is it's very interesting psychologically.
Right. You're just like, wait, I'm entitled to this. This course should be free. This just isn't valuable like enough to me.
Yes. I think it's interesting too what media companies are doing, what publishers are doing, where some will do just paywall. You got to sign up and subscribe and give us money to get in, period. Mm-hmm. Some will do a certain level of free, right? You get 10 free articles and then we're going to put a nag screen in front of you to say you've got to pay. Some will have a free offering that's free totally, and then like a pro offering to say, like, okay, you want a little more, that's going to be behind a subscription. And that is interesting, because then you're really catering to the users who do want.
Users who care a lot, sees a lot of value. Yeah.
Right, exactly. They're going to pay for value. That's the thing. Yeah. They do want to go above and beyond. So it's kind of like this hybrid where you get, in the best case, the best of both worlds.
The other interesting thing that's been happening around free and paid recently is this like crackdown, particularly among streaming services, of sharing
password sharing.
Passwords. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was at a family member's home a couple of weeks ago and we fired up Netflix and I got this like screen that I'd never seen before that was like, is this your household? Because we'd like to like, just like, you know, confirm, we're going to send you a confirmation email that this is your household. And I noticed that there were like several cousins like in the like Netflix
list.
User list. And I was like, hey, are you sharing your Netflix login? And it's like, yeah, yes, of course. Like literally the whole family who do not live together in the same household are sharing this login. And so the screen came up and I said to my, you know, my family member, like, hey, are you like, this is your Netflix account, right? Like we should set this Wi-Fi net. So I guess I didn't realize this, but they're doing like IP,
right?
Like on this IP address, like I will. And she was really stressed out. She's like, oh, I don't know. She like didn't want to cut off her other family members. And so like that's been really interesting too, right? Because you have people who are like, oh, like I was using, you know, so-and-so's account. I guess I should get my own or you know, I don't care. Folks are getting cut off.
Netflix have seen an uptick in legitimate subscribers because of the crackdown.
I mean, this is what happened for me with like Gmail. Like, I'm really dating myself. 2005, Gmail was like a gigabyte of storage. It was like, what?
It seems like limitless.
Limitless, exactly. And then I just got so used to having it, you know, the point at which, you know, I had like a, like a workspace, I guess what they call now a workspace account, like early on, like my own custom domain kind of thing.
Yep.
And at some point they just introduced pricing and it was low. It was like a couple of bucks a month. It's not that much. It was a no brainer. I was like, oh, definitely. I don't want to mess. I can't mess with this. It's my email, especially in photos. Photos is another big one.
It's like a non-decision. You're like, okay, yeah. Sure. You know, unless it was crazy expensive, you're going to be like, yeah, right. I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah. I even remember at Postlight, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but there was a point where like Google Workspace increased its prices like per seat. And we were always pretty watchful of our like SaaS costs.
Yep.
And we got together and I was like, oh, like, are we going to change to Zoom? Because we were like a meat shop and it was like, no.
It was too ingrained in our business.
Exactly. It was like, no, this is, we're going to pay. Our business has to keep running.
This is what you have to do in 2024 as you think about, you know, expanding a software platform, is you have to think about your core value and where your users are deriving value and figure out, do we want to orient around attention and figure out how to optimize around that? Or do we want to orient around dollars and align it to value and then optimize around that, you know? Or both. And some companies are really effectively doing both, but it's you have to think about them as two distinct approaches. Certainly from a, you know, just the logistics and the interfaces that people are using.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in the meetings at Intuit where they discussed what to do with Mint. Because
it would have been fascinating.
There would have been an opportunity with the user base that they had, which I am sure was in the millions, if not tens of millions. There was an opportunity for them to say, this now costs $3 a month or something, or whatever it is. And a lot of people, myself included, would have just paid.
I would have just paid.
Because the cost of switching would have been annoying. And it would have been like a Google Workspace type of situation. I'd be like, this is so ingrained. $3 a month, no problem. Like, I would do this. I'm sure that they did the math. Like, I'm sure that they did the analysis. And they made the call that it wasn't worth it. I'm sure that it took a lot of effort to keep that back-end engine of pulling that data, you know, right. And so they made a call to say, I'm not going to do this. And it's interesting to see a startup like Monarch say, like, we are going to take a run at that.
Yep.
We are going to see if this business is sustainable through paying users, because we think that this is valuable enough. And we think that enough people will pay more than it costs us to run this business. Like, this is the bet.
This is the bet.
That any product leader or company, you know, founder makes, right? Like,
and it's a hard bet.
You don't know. It's a hard bet. You just don't know. But Intuit had a lot of data.
Even though we're talking about how it's so much more accepted that people pay for subscriptions and software and apps, and it's just not as big of a deal as it once was to say, okay, yeah, I got to pay for something.
Yeah.
It is still a high bar, and most people are going to default to free, right? In so many areas. So to get someone to pay even a small amount, you know, every month or every year, you know, not everything is Gmail or iCloud where it's like, okay, this is, you know, part of like my everyday digital life.
Yeah.
So I completely understand why companies can make a decision that's like, it's not feasible for us.
I think that it depends on the user, right? Like for me, it was so ingrained, it would have been worth it, right? For someone else, the switch from free to paid, there's this culling. I think there are a lot of people that would have been like, no. I think that there are probably millions of zombie users at Mint that connected their account at some point.
And then never signed in.
And the servers were grinding and pulling and they never signed in and it was taking up resources and they weren't getting the attention in return, right? And I think part of what making it a paid service does is call it makes you an app for power users who care enough and engage enough to pay.
Well, in conclusion.
In conclusion.
I don't know what our conclusion is.
I mean, I think that... I think it's just that this model as a product leader, right? Thinking about this model, like what are you going for? Who is your real customer? You know, these questions of pricing and the economics of this thing and the kind of user that you're going to retain and keep and attract, like, and the growth trajectory, it's just a completely different thing.
It is. And it requires real thought and energy and strategy to figure out what you're going to go after and then how you orient your product and your decisions and the roadmap around where you're going.
And I think 2024, that's a different landscape. I think folks are willing to pay for things that they see that are really, really valuable.
Totally
right?
Agree.
So I think the playbook still kind of stands. It's like launch, you know, an MVP and, you know, find your product market fit and make it really, 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 really good during that time that it's free. And then at some point you say, okay, are there enough people in willing to hand over their credit card details to stay, right? And that's kind of a moment of reckoning, I think,
yep,
for new products and startups. And if anybody who works at Monarch is listening to this, we'd love to have you on the show. And I salute you for making a really good product.
Or
thank
if anybody
you.
At Intuit wants to give us a little insider scoop
little
about
insight.
The Mint shutdown, we'd love
we'd
to hear
love
from
to
you
talk
too.
To you. We would love to hear from you and your thoughts and experiences, your subscription fatigue, your feeling that you enjoy paying for things that bring you value. Send us an email. Chris, where can people send us a note?
The email address is catalyst@nttdata.com. CATALYST. I don't know why I always spell it, but I do. It's catalyst@nttdata.com.
It's because sound going into ear holes. Yes, please send us a note. We'd love to hear from you. This is a lot of fun. Thank you for listening to my journey from free to paid. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks all.
Bye.
Bye.